I'm Tammy Haddad, the founder of the Washington AI Network podcast. I'd like to invite you to join us at the inaugural AI Honors on June 3rd at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in Washington, D.C. This black tie dinner, award ceremony, and exclusive after party will convene 300 of the most influential leaders in artificial intelligence, from policymakers and industry to academia and civil society, to celebrate the extraordinary individuals shaping the future of technology and innovation. Visit aihonors.us to learn more. I hope to see you there. Welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast. I'm Tammy Haddad, the founder of the Washington AI Network. Today's guest is Ily Barakhtari, the president and CEO of the Special Competitive Studies Project and one of the world's leading experts on artificial intelligence. He worked in the first Trump administration, heading the National Security Commission on AI. Beginning on June 2nd through June 4th, he will host the AI Expo at the Washington, D.C. Convention Center. The Expo was so important to the Washington AI ecosystem that we decided to launch an AI awards dinner to bring together the leaders and highlight some of the people we see leading the way in AI. More on that later. So tell us what's up this year.
Tammy, good to be back. Thanks for hosting me. We learned a lot last year. The event was huge last year. We had more than 10,000 people over the course of 2 days. So this year is 3 days. So we expect more people. We had 150 exhibitors last year. We have more exhibitors this year. Exhibitors were coming from private sector last year. More than 50% of exhibitors were private sector companies, from little tech to big tech, across the entire technology stack. So we had companies representing quantum technologies, bio, fusion energy, and obviously AI. This year, we have more companies, more technologies represented at the expo. We had government agencies last year also that were there, you know, from DOE, which I thought had the best booth, to State Department and other government agencies hiring people on the spot for the jobs related to technology. And then the rest were allies and partners and universities. So they will all be there this year as well. As I said, it's going to be bigger. It's 3 days event. We have also added a couple of other things we can talk during the interview later. But I'm excited. We're 7 days away from the expo. The reception has been phenomenal. The reaction from people has really been phenomenal.
Because you're trying to change the world. First of all, what I love about it is you're showing what American AI dominance is. This is in the national security area. You should talk about why you started this expo.
Yeah, I think what we have seen over the years, and we've done the AI Commission first and then SCSP, so I've been in this space maybe for the last 6 years, is that what we are missing is, it's not the lack of writing and ideas, it's actually the lack of bringing this community together. We always talk about public-private partnership. We always talk about Silicon Valley coming to Washington or Washington coming to Silicon Valley. But I think the power of our nation is really in this community, in public-private partnerships, where people talk, interact, see the capabilities, see the demos, see all these things that we are building or the private sector is building. And I don't think something like that existed in Washington. And so that's why we picked the biggest venue in DC, which is the Convention Center, where we are bringing more than 10,000 people over the course of 3 days to interact, to see these capabilities, to meet, to find jobs. Because one of the things that I didn't mention is that we have a big talent and workforce area this year, where not only you can hear incredible conversations about how the future of workforce is changing, but also people are able, through the app, to land job interviews right there on the spot, be interviewed for a potential opportunity, and hopefully land jobs. Because I think this is changing radically, and I think we need to be positioned for this, that catalyst of bringing all these actors together in one place.
I got to say, I think from a year ago, it's actually gotten more complicated. And what I like about what you're doing is you're people that may only know one piece or say looking at a job, they get to the opportunity to touch all the other AIs that are out there. And also you're giving them a larger picture. Here's what's actually happening, and saying you should know. But how did you get all the experts to agree to do that? You've got all the major military, you've got high-level government officials. Why are they doing it?
I think when you look at how the AI conversation has evolved over the years, and you have contributed with the events and the podcast you guys do, is everybody now accepts the fact that AI is going to be a transformative technology. it's once in a generation technology. When I would hear the story 6 years ago, I would maybe laugh about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everybody says this about every technology. But when you look at the last 6 years, everything related to AI came to be bigger, stronger, and more powerful. Even in the last 12 months, since you and I have
been. How about the last week with the announcements, OpenAI?
And so I think now everybody accepts that we are in the transformative historical times. And this technology is really not only going to change, you know, national security, which we care about. And you mentioned we have top-notch leaders coming, but it's going to change the future of workforce, the future of other technology-related areas, because you can see now AI plus energy. You can see now AI plus robotics, AI plus fusion energy. All these areas are going to change because of AI. Education is changing because of AI. So we have the Deputy Secretary of Education actually coming and doing 2 events at the expo. So we're taking an entire nation approach to how AI is going to change all aspects of our lives and why we need to be prepared. And I don't think there's a better place than Washington to do this, because at the end of the day, Washington sets the course for the rest of the country in terms of adopting these capabilities for our national security, healthcare, education, and everything else.
And as we mentioned, you were in the first Trump administration. Now we've got the second Trump administration. How have things changed since they've been in there, not just for the expo, but just for AI?
I mean, look, I've got to give credit to the first Trump administration, specifically Michael Kratsios, Lynn Parker, who were there, and they drafted the first AI strategy. A lot of people forget, but OSTP in the first Trump administration came out with the first United States AI strategy. It's a great document. You can still find it online. But as I said, AI evolved so much in the meantime that the Biden administration had to come out with a new strategy, which every administration does their own strategy. And now I think you have an AI czar at the White House just because how AI became predominant, that you needed a centrally pointed figure that does the AI policy and strategy. So things have changed. I think the Trump administration has put enormous focus on AI. You can see it from the trip he just concluded in the Middle East, but I think I would argue the central feature of that trip was technology and more specifically AI.
Yeah. And what did you think about
all this? I thought it was an incredible trip, I think, when you look at it. I think, you know.
Do you think it'll work against China? The fact that
countries are aligned now
with the US?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. But I think we are in the middle of the global realignment of infrastructure for the future of AI. I think that's what's happening right now. If you look at the energy sources, if you look at the hardware required for the AI, we are in the middle of probably the biggest realignment. I would not call it trade anymore, because trade is so like probably previous century when it comes to these kind of conversation. But I think we're talking about whoever builds the future infrastructure that underlines the power of the next generation AI. From that perspective, the trip was like an incredible success, because if the Middle Eastern countries up till that moment were hedging between us and China, I think the White House really put them solely in our camp with all the deal the president made related to the future of energy and AI. I've said it many times, but we need to bring Europeans along, because I think you cannot have our major allies really lag behind in the space.
Yeah. And from 12 months ago, are they farther behind? Have they caught up a little? I mean, I was in Paris for the AI safety summit, I don't know that many announcements were made that really changed the...
No, I think you're right, Tammy. I think this is stagnation when you look at the European continent. When you talk about Europe, you have to understand that Great Britain is there too, but Great Britain has like great companies, great universities. You have DeepMind there, obviously part of Google, but I think there's a broad stagnation in continental Europe. And I think we have to work with them, because as a major trading partner, EU, as our allies, we have NATO there. You cannot afford in this competition with China to have our major allies lag behind in this new infrastructure era, right?
You need to tell President Trump that, right? Because he imposed a tariff.
Yeah.
But
the president has imposed tariffs almost on everyone, right? And it's now a part of the negotiation on how these countries will formulate with the United States.
You talk to the European leaders. What is your take? You think they're going to play? I mean, it was clear when I was in Paris that they know it's a problem.
Yeah.
But how do you move all those countries around to come together?
I mean, look, every time I talk to European leaders, I use India as an example. We were in India last month. I don't think there's one country in the world that understands the historical opportunities they're having right now in terms of building a bilateral trade agreement with the United States that centers around technology and the future of technology. And India has all the ingredients. They have the people, they have the universities, they have the talent, they have incredible companies. And when you listen to the foreign minister or Prime Minister Modi, they know exactly what they want to be by the end of this decade. And so I tell our European colleagues, we need to have a vision of where US Europe needs to be by 2030. Once you have that vision, you can walk back then and start putting the right strategies in place to get to that point. But right now, I don't think we have a clear vision where we want to be. I think our vision should be together we get to AGI before China does, because the implications, as you know, of who gets to AGI first will be tremendous for the world. And it's better to get there with allies than our enemy to get there first.
I know Fareed Zakaria is going to be at the expo, which is terrific. And Eric Schmidt was on there, I would say, about 3 months or 4 months before DeepSeek came out. And he said this was coming. And then it all came out and that changed things. And do you think it really woke up the rest of America?
So as somebody that has tracked these issues for a long time, Tammy, I mean, the DeepSeek moment for us was not a Sputnik moment. Because if you go back to 2017, almost every year, China has had a major technological breakthrough. They had it in 5G when they deployed Huawei globally and they crushed our telcos. Yep. They had a major breakthrough in hypersonic solar panels. And then eventually came DeepSeek. So there's no surprise that they came on top all of a sudden with a model like that, because they have, you know, enormous talented people. They have a lot of resources dedicated to this. They also understand AI is the future. So, of course, for them, losing the AI competition is something I don't think they will accept that easily. But this only explains that this is a dynamic competition. We will never get to a point in which you can call this a win or a loss, because, you know, this changes almost every day, as you know, with AI. In January, DeepSeek was really on top of all the open source models. And now they're not anymore, because Llama released a better model, proprietary models released better models. But China is a serious competitor. So we shouldn't take these things lightly and say like, oh yeah, like we're winning today. This will forever be a competition between us and them.
Okay.
Because of who they are and what they're doing.
And you have competition in the name of your organization. Now, I'm excited about the drone competition that's going to take place. Talk about that.
So when we looked at how to make this year's expo bigger and better, we added a couple of things. In addition to like many events we have, so we have 411 speakers. We have 320 events that are taking place across all the rooms and stages. We thought people might enjoy not only observing and listening to the incredible conversations, but actually seeing stuff. And so drones have shaped like the last couple of years, the conversation about the warfare, about the nature of intelligence going forward and everything else. So with the Drone Industry Association, we have partnered to do a big, like there's a big area that has obstacles where military services will compete in flighting these first-person view drones, as they call it. And so over the course of 3 days, you'll have the Marine Corps, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Army competing
with each other. That's amazing.
The area is huge, so I invite everybody to come and see it, and they'll see the obstacles in the air. We have partnered with many people with Building Momentum who are building these things. And we're excited because we have never done this before, but I think over the course of 3 days, people will see like why this matters. Why is this?
So we'll be able to see what they see.
Yeah. You can see what they're seeing because they'll have multiple TV screens around the cage, because obviously these pilots will wear these FPV goggles. You will see the obstacles in the air because they will hang in the air where the drones will fly in and out. And then on the floor, I think they'll have some tanks that are not moving. So drone has to hit a tank. They'll drop there and whatnot. So we're excited about the drone competition.
So I see you have a hackathon coming up. What's that?
Yeah. So to continue building more momentum towards this, we actually organized 2 hackathons in our office. And they went extremely well because we got more than 100 people to come in, spend an entire Saturday building AI applications. And so at the convention center, we're doing a global hackathon. So we have a half floor at the convention center where we expect more than 300 hackers competing. They will build applications. The task will be revealed the day off.
Okay.
So you got to register first. You got to come there. And then there's an area divided just for hackers where they can spend 3 days. Obviously, only during the day. Not.
Are they going to sleep there?
No, because of the security reasons. Convention.
Okay,
center,
just checking.
No, they're all
when I see hackathon, I think like
with you, but
nap mats and things like that.
Yeah, this is still Washington, Tammy. Yeah, and they'll build these AI applications over the course of 2 days. And then on the third day, in front of the judges, It will showcase their AI application. We're partnering with the AGI House, which is the leading house out of Silicon Valley that does these hackathons. They've always been our partner in these things. They'll bring judges, we'll bring judges. And then over the course of like 2 hours, as hackers present their AI applications, we will announce the winner.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That sounds like fun. People can watch, right? Can I go over?
Yeah.
All right, good. Yeah. Okay, so I have to turn for a minute over to the national security.
Yeah.
You were at the NSC in the first administration, and they've announced that a lot of people have left. They've cut back. I wonder if you can give us a sense of what the NSC is like, and what do you think about the changes that are being made this time?
The purpose of the NSC is really to serve as a coordinating body for all the departments and agencies in how options are provided to the president on any given issue, whether or not we're going to engage a country, whether or not we're negotiating with a certain country on certain issues. The role of the NSC traditionally has been to coordinate these policies and recommendations for the president. Now, every president, which I think people forget, tends to build the NSC the way they want it, the way they prefer information flow, the way they prefer decision-making. And so you see these ebbs and flows in terms of how big the NSC is with every president. There are presidents that have built the NSC to the level of 400 or 500 people. And I know this because I was the chief of staff of the National Security Advisor, so we had to deal with all the people. One thing that I think a lot of people don't realize is that 90% of people are detailed to the NSC. So when they say 100 people have been relieved from the NSC, that doesn't mean these people have been fired.
Right.
That means that people have been asked to go back to their departments or agencies where they come from.
Are they mostly military?
No, not necessarily. I was a civilian detailee from Department of Defense to the White House. Tara, my colleague here, was in a similar camp. She was a civilian from DOD detailed to the NSC. And so if people that have been relieved were political appointees, those people came after January 20th.
Mm-hmm.
So the president, maybe after a 100-day evaluation, decided that these people are no longer needed. You know, change in personnel requires also everybody brings their own team. I know Secretary Rubio now has a dual hat job. And so maybe he prefers a different team, a different organizational structure from the ones that the previous National Security Advisor had. So I think these things are natural. There are pros and cons when you do these things. I mean, obviously the pros, people think that the information flow will be much more streamlined. The decision will be faster. The cons are these policy issues are complicated. So you need people to analyze it and give the president the best advice on the courses that he has ahead of him to pursue. So everybody prefers a different NSC, but having served in one that was, I thought, well-organized under General McMaster, there's a sweet spot in terms of you have enough people there to staff the president and the decision-making, as well as help coordinate the interagency.
Also, you didn't have someone like David Sachs there, who's a real veteran of technology and AI, and clearly has a larger role in those issues. I'm not saying a national security per se. Yeah.
So when you look at it, the White House that I served, we didn't have a directorate or a bureau that you call it to focus on emerging tech. Just because at that point, this is 2017, 18, AI or all the emerging tech were still not part of the national security, what I call it, discourse.
Okay.
Remember, National Security Council is only focused primarily on national security issues. You have also the National Economic Council and OSTP, right? And so we didn't have the Office of Emerging Tech. President Biden created in the NSC the Office of Emerging Tech that Turgul and Chadra led it, I thought, successfully, because all the export control policies came actually from that office. But because AI, I think, has grown in terms of importance and in terms of like how it's touching everything, President Trump then decided to appoint an AI czar.
Right.
If you look back, we had war czars under George W. Bush 1 and 2, I believe, because we were so involved into the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq that they required a standalone war czar for those jobs. So because now AI is so central to everything we're doing, I think President appointed David Sachs as the AI czar because it touches so many issues in so many offices in the White House that it doesn't belong solely just on OSTP or NSC or NEC.
And he was on that trip to the Middle East and played a prominent role.
I think so.
Yeah. Interesting times, I think, because they have been able to bring back a lot of production to the U.S., AMD, NVIDIA, et cetera. Is there progress? If you were talking to President Trump right now, what would you tell him to do?
I think the future of manufacturing is advanced manufacturing. And I think this is what goes sometimes not announced, because we need to build factories of the future, factories where robots will build, you know, these items, not humans. Humans will monitor and manage these. Like if you look at Jensen Huang, he talks about the AI factory of the future that needs an AI manager. And so we're not talking about a classic manufacturing. That sounds really good. But I think what we're talking about here is the advanced manufacturing. We're talking about more investments in robotics, automation, energy sources. And those are the factories of the future. That's, I think, the mindset we have to shift and how we talk about these things. Because if you look at China, they're already there. They're investing enormous amount of resources towards automation and robotics. They have a demographic problem, so of course they're going to move towards more automation. But they already have factories that are building cars 24/7, factories that never sleep.
Right.
So that is sort of like the vision we need here when we talk about manufacturing.
Well, that's why it's interesting that you're doing these career centers, so people can see the future jobs that are there as the robots, et cetera, come in.
Yeah.
Right.
And we have robotics companies that come into the expo as well. We have Boston Dynamics, Animal, all the top companies that we have. We don't have many, which I think we should be mindful, like, hey, if this is how the future of factories and manufacturing is going to happen, we need more companies in this space.
Right, because there aren't that many. It's a big problem.
We had the AI Plus Robotics Summit, and there's like a dozen companies we have. Right.
Some of them haven't even made them yet.
Exactly. And China, I think, produces one robot every 7 seconds, just for the record. So.
Yeah. The video of the Chinese robots, it just makes you see what it looks like.
And when you combine AI now, large language models, and then multimodal, you know, next generation models, I think that's when it's all going to come together.
Yeah, I think that's true. And we have to talk about one more thing before we go. On the night of June 3rd, we are hosting the AI Honors Dinner. And honestly, you are the inspiration for that, because going to the expo, seeing people from around the world and people that are doing such important work, we thought that we should highlight them. You will be one among them. I thank you so much for your leadership. And I'm not going to reveal who the honorees are, but anyone that's going to the expo in the day, go back to your hotel room, go home, put your tuxedo on, and come over to the Waldorf Hotel, where you can see and meet some of the great leaders of AI. And Lee, I can't thank you enough for your leadership on AI, your leadership in Washington on AI, and we'll see you at the Honors Dinner and the expo before.
Thanks, Tammy. I'm glad you're doing the AI Honors, because when we started the expo, I think our vision, our dream was that Washington starts becoming the AI center in the Northeast, and that people do their own thing during those expo days. And I know now, like many dinners, people are organizing board meetings around the expo days. And obviously the true highlight will be the AI Honors Dinner that you're organizing. So hopefully next year this becomes even bigger and takes more events and more things happening around the National Capital Region.
I'm sure it will. Thank you so much for your leadership, and thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Tammy.
Thank you for listening to the Washington AI Network podcast. Be sure to subscribe and join the conversation. The Washington AI Network is a bipartisan forum bringing together the top leaders and industry experts to discuss the biggest opportunities and the greatest challenges around AI. The Washington AI Network podcast is produced and recorded by Haddad Media. Thanks for listening.